Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Is technology getting ahead of itself? Hi, friends. Welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom for day two of our innovation article. Today is June 21st, and you're in the studio with Naomi, Josh, and Amanda. Welcome back. So, yesterday we began our article, Quantum Leap of Faith. Now, Amanda, can you give us a little intro into what this is about?
Sure. We're learning about We hear from Mike Lazaridis. He is the co-founder of RIM, Research in Motion, or otherwise now known as BlackBerry, and just how with his personal wealth he has invested in establishing a what we would call a Silicon Valley type in Waterloo, Canada.
Okay, so Silicon Valley is the center for all things technological in California. But we're starting something new here, or he's trying to. And Josh, how has he been trying to create this quantum hub, as we called it?
Well, he says that he's got a multi-act plan. And that was a good phrase we talked about yesterday. The first act of his plan and then the second act, almost like he's directing a play or has written a Broadway musical. And his first act was setting up or endowing an institute called the Perimeter Institute. And we learned yesterday he gave that organization almost $200 million.
Right. And he has also supported the University of Waterloo in their efforts to learn more about quantum computing and do more research in that field, too. Now, where is all this happening, Amanda?
All happening in Waterloo, Ontario, which is in your home country.
It is indeed. It's a beautiful place, really green, lots of trees, you know, really nice to walk around. Lots of festivals. Also, a lot of people who are not so into technology, different groups of people there who kind of avoid technology. And yet we learned that this could be a center.
That's right. It's where he started. Well, first of all, it's his hometown. So this is where Mr. Lazaridis was born and where he grew up. And it's where he founded RIM, Research in Motion, now known as BlackBerry. And when a company like that sets up a headquarters, they almost create an ecosystem of other companies, partners, suppliers, vendors. And then they also need talent, people to work at all those places. So they attract universities and people coming to study so that they can work at those types of companies.
Right. If I'm interested in this field, then I'll look, you know, where is this taking off? Where would I have good potential to have a job? Then I want to go to school nearby so I can maybe get an internship and learn more, familiarize myself, meet people. It's just a good idea. Actually, today on page 35, we see that we have a pretty interesting graphic there, don't we, Amanda?
We do. Down the bottom, it says, you can keep your valley.
Why is it titled that?
Because we often think of Silicon Valley, and there it just means that you can keep that. You can hold on to it. We don't need that because now we're in a place that doesn't have a valley.
Right.
So is Waterloo completely flat? Or do they have some mountains?
It's pretty flat. Maybe some little hills, but nothing too big.
Got it.
So they're saying, oh, we don't even need Silicon Valley. Check out Waterloo. Check out how it's growing. It says that a growing number of companies are moving to Waterloo.
That's right. We talk about two different types of firms and how those companies have grown over the past 5 years. The first column talks about tech firms, so just any company in the technology field. And then the second column talks about the new startups. And we've talked about that phrase on this program before, a company who is just getting off the ground, usually related to something innovative, is called a startup.
Right. Now, it looks like the tech firms have nearly doubled over the last 5 years. That's incredible. But also the revenue has tripled.
Right. In fact, I'm just looking between 2010 and 2012, the startups, new startups have more than doubled.
Wow.
And the new startups are starting to catch up to the tech firms.
Right. So if you were a little skeptical about this place being sort of the up-and-coming center for innovation, we can see from these numbers that there's a good reason to believe that Mike Lazaridis is on the right track.
That's right. He's not only attracting smart young people, but there's people making lots of money in Waterloo.
Okay, so what was more about, can you tell me more about Act Two of his plan? What did he create?
He decided he need, well, obviously when you're talking about an ecosystem like this, you need the cooperation of the local government, and also to get, you know, these deep thinkers needed for physics theory, we need a university. So he partnered with the Canadian government and the University of Waterloo together to help get towards or be part of the race to building a quantum computer.
Right. And so they actually made this quantum nano center, didn't they, Josh?
That's right. And the center, and we see a little different spelling than the American version of the word spelling. This one's a little fancier when it has the E at the end.
The British and Canadian version. And I guess down under.
Yes, we use the British and Canadian version too.
Yes. So this is one of those areas where English differs in different parts of the world.
That's right. And this is a place where people can come together and work on the future of quantum computing and pass their theories of quantum physics. And we talked about the word quantum yesterday. It's a word that's almost dichotomous. It has definitions that seem to contradict each other. We use it sometimes to say it was like a giant, huge step forward in the way we did something in the past. But in this case, it's about something very, very small and the smallest amount of energy that you can measure.
Right. And so when you're working with quantum physics, you're working on a very tiny scale, and anything can affect how your results turn out. So we learned that actually this center needs to be pretty carefully built. And we'll learn more about that today. But first, we're going to explain more about exactly what quantum computing is all about. So page 35 of your Advanced magazine, we'll start the reading for today, June 21st.
A seismic technological shift. Why do this? To Lazaridis, quantum computing portends a seismic technological shift, one he believes could be a huge boost to Canada's economy. In today's computers, processors control the behavior of transistors with microbursts of electricity, turning them off and on to represent information as ones or zeros, a representation that is called a bit. A quantum computer is different. Rather than using transistors, it taps the peculiar properties of matter itself to do the calculations. These machines don't use bits, they use qubits, whose position can stand for both 1 and 0 at the same time. This property allows a quantum computer to do a tremendous number of calculations simultaneously. For certain applications, such capabilities make it far faster than any conventional computer presently in existence. You might think of today's machines as a locksmith trying to open a lock with dozens of keys, one after another. A quantum computer will be like the locksmith trying to open a lock with all his keys at once.
Okay, so we are experiencing a seismic technological shift. And when we use that word seismic, it's usually referring to what?
Earthquakes. It's referring to or relating to anything or caused by an earthquake. So often, just anything seismic, we think, earthquake.
Right. Now, usually if there's an actual seismic shift, then land gets changed, right?
That's right. Yes, the actual geography of a place is shifted, is moved. For instance, you know, land will go in or go out, cliffs will change, things like that.
Right. So even, you know, decades later, you can see evidence that there was an earthquake here. It really changes the the way a place looks and, you know, where things are located forever. And so here at a technological shift, we're sort of trying to apply the same idea to the world of technology.
That's right. And you'll see it sometimes in articles you read. If something is made just a huge shift away from what it used to do or where it used to be done, we can call it a seismic shift. And Lazaridis is in the midst of one right now in the world of quantum computing.
Right. So why did he spend all this money? Why did he fund all these centers and research and so on? Well, to Lazaridis, quantum computing portends a seismic technological shift. And if you this is a bit of a tricky one to use for something to portend something else.
Yeah, you didn't say like, pretend.
Yeah, it does sound like pretend, but it has a different meaning.
That's right. It's almost like it's a sign that he read along the road that said, big change coming. And if something portends to something else, it gives you a hint that it's on its way.
Right. I think, for example, that lightning portends thunder. Mm. You know, when you see the lightning, you know that that thunder is going to come in a minute, you know, and you're sort of counting, okay, how close is it? So to portend something, quantum computing is going to bring this change. And he thinks that this shift is an exciting one.
That's right. He believes that it will bring a huge boost to Canada's economy. He's from Canada. He's Canadian. So he believes that this shift in computing will really bring a good income into Canada's economy.
Right. Canada's economy is doing okay. But, you know, it's not really one of the big world players that you think of. It's a fairly small population considering how big the landmass is.
And when you think of it, I mostly think of natural resources
right.
being exported to the world. Yeah. Maple syrup and logs.
And oil.
And
don't
oil.
Forget oil.
Right.
All right. So a big boost for the economy, always exciting. It means more jobs, more success, more money. Everyone's doing well. So in today's computers, how does this work? Okay, basically this from here on, friends, is where we are trying to explain what quantum computing is. So bear with us.
Right. And if you're a scientist, forgive us.
Yes. Exactly. So in today's computers, how do they work? What happens? What's the process?
Well, we learned, first of all, that processors control the behavior of transistors, and they do that with microbursts of electricity.
Okay. So when the computers are processing, changing the information, processing that information through, it involves these little transistors that kind of bring the information.
That's right. I've always thought of this as the digital way of something working. It's the ones and zeros that we talk about there in line 7, that it's data. It's words. It's information that instead of analog, where it was just, you know, written out character by character, it's digitized or turned into bits, ones and zeros.
Right. If you learned binary code in school, I remember having to learn this. It's all 0100011101. And everything can be transformed into this code, which is a great system and it works well for computers. But it makes sense that this might not be the ultimate in practicality and speed. It may not be the best possible way for computers to work.
That's right. It's happening at a faster speed today than ever before, but there is an entire different way that a computer can translate or synthesize data, and that's this idea of instead of using transistors, tapping the peculiar properties of matter itself.
Okay. So today's computers use transistors and this binary code. Quantum computing doesn't use transistors. It focuses on each item.
That's right. And they call them qubits. And qubits, they hold a position that can hold both 1 and 0 at the same time.
So they don't have to switch back and forth from 1 to 0. They can just be 1 or 0, represent it without having to change.
Right.
That's right. A big shift from the way bits work.
So what does that mean? Okay, whether you understand that last part or not, what
it has
is
a consequence.
The point? Yeah,
yes.
What's the point of this?
A very powerful result is that the fact now that a quantum computer could do a lot of those calculations much faster because they could do them at the same time or simultaneously.
Right. If you do something simultaneously, sometimes we make a joke about this, like, can you rub your stomach and pat your head simultaneously? Most of us get confused after a little bit. but this computer would not get confused.
That's right. It does not get confused. It can do both at the same time, which we learn in the next sentence would be good for certain applications because it will make them much faster than the computers that we're currently using right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is where technology might be getting slightly ahead of itself, that, you know, this is, it seems like infinite possibilities. You want to be able to do a tremendous number of things at the same time, but this does make it a lot faster. We might not be able to support that kind of speed yet, but we have a great metaphor to explain exactly how this works.
That's right. We begin to think about a locksmith. And a locksmith is a person that you bring over to your house when you've lost your keys or when you locked the keys in your car and you need him to open a lock that you're unable to open. So imagine him coming over and he has a dozen keys and he's trying to open the lock with dozens of keys one after the other.
Right. We've seen this. Or even, you know, I'm thinking at my school, there was a janitor who had like this enormous key ring with, I'm sure, 40 keys on there for every single thing, you know. And if someone was locked out, he'd go through, oh, is it this one? Let me try it. Nope, not that one, you know. And you're just waiting like, oh, okay, this is going to take hours. But this goes much faster.
That's right. We learned that a quantum computer would allow the locksmith to open the lock with all his keys at once. So you could again imagine that janitor putting the whole bunch of keys into the lock, turning it, and then it'll find the one that actually does unlock the door all at one time.
Right. So I really like this analogy, this metaphor for what quantum computing is like. It helps make sense of it to me. Instead of going through one by one and entering every one and zero of that binary code, of that digital bit, these qubits they're just so much more convenient.
That's right. They're just powerful machines that will do all sorts of computations at speeds we've never imagined.
Okay. So this technology, does it exist? Is it possible? Can I buy a quantum computer this week? Let's find out in our next reading.
Already a reality, but a long way to go. In Waterloo and similar labs around the world, there are now quantum computers that use 2 or 4 or 8 qubits. They're sometimes supercooled to nearly minus 270 degrees Celsius. Unfortunately, the machines have about the computational power of 1970s-era calculators. But a computer with 60 qubits? Such a machine is likely 15 years off, says Raymond Laflamme, the head of the IQC. Yet, if you had one now, it could overpower current encryption systems, wreaking havoc on the Internet. A big quantum computer could conceivably do good things, too, such as model pharmaceuticals to discover new drugs or create novel options for digital security. This explains Lazaridis's enthusiasm. The quantum computer isn't just 10 times faster than a Pentium, he says. It's a whole different scale.
So as it turns out, quantum computing is already a reality, but it's not a very practical reality yet. Let's find out more about what that means. Now, we are again in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada right now, but not only in Waterloo, also in similar labs around the world, what already exists.
There are now quantum computers, and they do use 2 or 4 or 8 qubits. Now, we see some of the things that you need to think about when using quantum computers, because we see in the brackets it says they're sometimes supercooled to nearly minus 270 degrees Celsius.
I can't really imagine that temperature, and I'm Canadian. Like, it gets cold in Canada, but that is insane.
Super cooled, it says.
Yeah.
Keyword super.
Yes. So here's one of the instances of this being not really practical yet. You know, it's exciting. They can do it, but it takes so much to let it happen.
Yes. Could you imagine going to the computer store and them saying, here's your new quantum computer, and here's your freezer that you need to store it in.
Yeah, it comes with the accessory, right? The freezer.
You have to, like, walk into this cold room with ice on the walls and sit down in front of your computer with your gloves on. Oh, man. Okay, so they exist, but they don't really work, you might say.
No, because they're not even very fast. Mm. So we've got this technology out in the real world, but it says, unfortunately, those machines have the power of 1970s era calculators.
Okay, so we have this magical computer already in existence, but it does what?
It has the computational power of a 1970s era calculator. Computational, that just means the ability to compute something. But a 1970s era calculator, do you? Either of you have this kind of calculator?
It didn't do much.
No, I'm thinking, was that even like a scientific calculator yet?
I doubt it.
I think we're
talking simple addition, multiplication, and percentages.
Yeah. So I don't need a quantum computer to do that because I have a little solar-powered calculator in my desk, and it does the job, and it weighs like as much as a piece of cardboard. Okay, so this is not why they've made it, all right? They did not create these super-cooled, huge machines, you know.
To go back in time.
Right. As interesting that would be. But if we wanted a computer with 60 qubits, that would maybe be closer to on par with some of our more basic computers today. What would that involve?
That would involve some fantastic high-speed calculations, but that's not physically possible yet. That just the infrastructure necessary, the bandwidth, the server storage, lots of things would need to happen for us to be able to compute that quickly.
Right. According to Raymond Laflamme, who's the head of the IQC that we mentioned yesterday, University of Waterloo's Institute for Quantum Computing, he says such a machine is likely or probably 15 years off, 15 years in the future. So, actually, that's fairly close. I mean, we are getting there. Yet, if you had one now, what would happen?
Well, yeah, hence the need for it to be 15 years in the future, because if you had it now, it would overpower the current encryption systems and wreak havoc on the internet. So we're needing other things to also go into the future with its technology for it to be able to hold the capacity of this kind of computer.
Right. The whole computing system works according to certain rules now, especially when it comes to something like encryption, making sure the codes calculate properly and come out with the right results.
I mean, just try to imagine if you're doing some online shopping and you logged into your account and you chose a few items and you entered in your credit card information, and on the other side of your computer was a quantum computer that set that information so quickly that it literally broke the internet. The computer system that we have in place isn't yet able to support information being quantified that quickly.
Right. So if it happened, it would wreak havoc on the internet. If you wreak havoc on something, what does that mean?
You're causing confusion and there's a lack of order. So therefore, it results in there being damage or trouble. So you are confused.
Yes. We're not ready for this. It's sort of like someone running a marathon without training that will wreak havoc on your body. In this case, if the internet and the computing world isn't prepared, it doesn't have the support needed for this kind of computer, you just can't do it. It won't work. It will break. Now, a big quantum computer could conceivably, or we can imagine that, it could do good things.
That's right. It's not just going to do our math problems very quickly for us. It's going to do amazing things like model pharmaceuticals to discover new drugs. So the pharmaceutical industry are healthcare companies that are trying to cure cancer and cataracts and all sorts of common diseases. And they need drugs. They need breakthroughs in their science and in their research. And it could model those things for them.
Okay. What's another example of what it could do?
It could also create novel options for digital security. So creative ideas with regard to virus protection on your computer, just password protection on your computer, just so that people are not trying to hack into your system.
That's right. This is potentially going in the area of retinal scanning. Instead of typing in passwords, perhaps your computer will just know it's you in front of it and allow you to access your email and your bank accounts.
Sounds very exciting. But before we wrap up, let's go to today's feature.
What are you looking at, Jill?
Oh, I'm searching job postings online. You know, I really want to move in a different direction in my work.
Good. I'm glad that you're finally taking action on this. You've talked about it for a long time, so it's good to see you cultivate some potential opportunities.
I hope to make a quantum leap in my career, Jack. It's time for a seismic change.
Well, I'll credit you with realizing that you need a change. Most people put off change.
Actually, I hope to make a big change, like moving to Canada.
Not only do you want to change your job, but you simultaneously want to move to Canada?
Yes, I'm going to completely change everything, my job and where I live.
But why Canada?
I'll tell you later.
Ooh, stay tuned for part two tomorrow. But, of course, the reason why someone might want to move to Waterloo is to work with Mike Lazaridis and everyone else doing this quantum research. Why is he so excited and enthusiastic about this?
Well, we see in the last sentence of today's reading, we see the quantum computer isn't just 10 times faster than a Pentium. It's a whole different scale.
What does he mean by that?
Well, the way we're doing computing today is with microchips, and the Pentium is the most common processor that we use inside our computers, and it just doesn't compare. We're on an entirely different plane.
Right. I think, again, it's helpful to go back to the analogy they used. It isn't just trying every key in that lock faster. It's trying them all at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that the possibilities just sort of expand from there. Well, there is more to learn and more to read to expand our knowledge of English and this topic of quantum computing. So please do come back tomorrow for the final day of this article. We'll see you then.